I hope to see you next week at the CAA World Congress of Sports. I'll be getting into Los Angeles early over the weekend, so if you're around, I'd love to say hello. Register now. We should have record attendance. And this is your Morning Buzzcast for Monday, April 8th. Good morning. I'm Abe Madcore. Thanks for listening. I thought Sunday was a great day for sports. Not a great day for women's sports or women's basketball. It was a great day for all of sports. Seeing such high-level competition between South Carolina and Iowa, such great fandom, such class and comportment I felt by both sides, I really believe this tournament was such a positive force for the power and impact of sports. And boy, congratulations to both teams, especially the University of South Carolina, who were just that good. Now, I know everyone is waiting for the final viewership numbers to come in from yesterday's game, as it should build on Friday night's rating. Remember, Friday night, Iowa's win over UConn set another record as the most watched women's college basketball game in history. The game was viewed by 14.2 million people, peaked at 17 million viewers. That, of course, topped the previous record, which was just set on Monday, last Monday, when Iowa's win over LSU averaged 12.3 million viewers. And so you see this line of growth, 12.3 to 14.2, and we will see what Sunday's number will be on ABC. But just note, Friday's figure of 14.2 is higher than every World Series and NBA Finals game last year. SBJ's Austin Karp emailed me this morning. He believes Sunday's game on ABC, combined with the ESPN alternate telecast, has all the hallmarks for a big number, a close game. There wasn't a lot of other sports competition. He notes this will be the third straight game to set a viewership record among women's college basketball. He expects it to be north of 18.5 million and closer to 20 million. That is unbelievable. And barring something like an overtime game tonight, he fully expects South Carolina, Iowa to top UConn, Purdue on the men's side. And yes, I know it sounds odd that the men's final almost feels like an afterthought, but we still do have Connecticut playing Purdue, two number one seeds. They'll meet tonight as Connecticut looks to become the first back-to-back champs since Florida did it in 2006-2007. That game tonight on TBS and a late 9:20 Eastern time tip-off. But we'll have full recap on all the numbers later in the week. And it wasn't just women's basketball setting records. We saw records over the weekend in women's soccer as well. Atlanta set a record of tickets sold for a U.S. women's national team friendly match in Saturday's She Believes Cup at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, an announced attendance of 50,600 coming out to see U.S. defeat Japan. Now, the previous record was just over 49,000 set in 2019. Here they get more than 50,600. We have said that Atlanta wants to be seen as the soccer capital of the country, and there will be at least 21 soccer matches played at Mercedes-Benz Stadium by the end of this MLS season. And certainly the women's friendly match drew very well. Meanwhile, groundbreaking for the U.S. Soccer Federation's National Training Center just outside Atlanta will take place today on Monday. And this National Training Center will host the U.S.'s 27 soccer teams. They hope this facility is completed before the 2026 World Cup. It'll be over 200 acres, have as many as 12 fields. I've been to the site. It's going to be quite a complex. It will sit just outside of Atlanta. Gensler has been hired to design the center. And again, groundbreaking scheduled for today on Monday. So let's move on. As we discussed last week, the A's are set to move to Sacramento starting next season. And A's front office employees were told late last week that a staff reduction is coming after this season, the team's last in Oakland, before it relocates to Sacramento for a few years, before the organization hopes to eventually play in Las Vegas. So remember, the A's have partnered with the NBA Sacramento Kings and the AAA Rivercats, both of which are owned by Vivek Ranadive. That will result in redundancy among workers, prompting the A's to cut staff. And so that means those jobs will be absorbed by employees of the Kings and the Rivercats. It is uncertain how many employees will be affected and let go by the A's. It's just another interesting dynamic to this whole storyline. And remember, there is no lease agreement for the A's in Sacramento. They won't pay any rent. And don't overlook this fact. Vivek Ranadive is clearly using this chance to bring the A's to Sacramento as a way to show that that city, Sacramento, can be a long-term solution for a Major League Baseball team. He really believes this is an opportunity to showcase what Sacramento has to offer and why it deserves a baseball team. So a lot of storylines around the A's and their relocation from Oakland to Sacramento. You know, you hear me talk about this on the Buzzcast a lot because I'm right in the middle of it here in this Charlotte market. And that's the challenge in NASCAR of reaching a charter agreement between NASCAR and its teams. The talks have taken longer than many have thought. There's real tension between the teams and NASCAR's leadership and management. And if you want proof, look at the social media squabble between two high-profile leaders in the sport that occurred on Friday, where you had Marcus Smith from Speedway Motorsports have an eye-opening exchange with the outspoken driver and team owner, Denny Hamlin. The two went after each other over the condition at Speedway Motorsports tracks, over Denny Hamlin's failure to win a NASCAR championship so far, and even how Marcus Smith runs the company he inherited from his father, the late Bruton Smith. These got personal. And outside of the specific back and forth, this exchange is reflective of the tension that exists between the sides as they continue to try and negotiate a charter agreement and reach a new deal, which of course is predicated on revenue sharing and competition changes to the sport. So big, weighty issues. But it is rare when two high-profile leaders go public like they did, and they both did simmer down. They agreed to move on, but it is reflective of the dynamic in NASCAR today. Let's shift to some spring football, because St. Louis is proving again to be a strong football market. The United Football League's St. Louis Battlehawks won their home opener on Saturday in front of the largest crowd in UFL history, and yes, I know it's only been a few weeks, but still, more than 40,000 fans coming out to see the game at St. Louis's America's Center is an impressive number. And remember, this city was strong during its previous run in the XFL, so it's not a surprise that UFL co-owner Danny Garcia called the St. Louis Battlehawks a premier franchise in the 8-team league. And while football attendance was strong in St. Louis, not so in another UFL market, as the Memphis Showboats drew only 8,700 fans for Saturday's home opener against the San Antonio franchise. So again, we'll keep following the attendance and the interest in spring football because this certainly has a lot of people talking. And we'll end with this, a shakeup at ESPN, as longtime executive editor and head of event and studio production, Norby Williamson, will be leaving ESPN. This was news first reported by the New York Post. Now, Norby Williamson's last day was Friday after nearly 40 years at the company. Now, sources confirmed to me over the weekend that Williamson and ESPN president of content, Burke Magnus, had different visions of ESPN's long-term content strategy, and Magnus made the decision to move on from Norby Williamson. Now, a search for his replacement will begin immediately. Williamson's career at ESPN began in the mailroom in 1985. He was a big personality. He was a big figure at the network, and at times, he was polarizing. But there was a lot of respect for Norby Williamson among top leaders. However, if leaders are not aligned day to day, some changes have to be made. Sources told me that Williamson knew that his end was near. He was at ease knowing that he had had a four-decade run from someone again who started in the mailroom, so quite a run for him. He will leave ESPN after more than 40 years. Norby Williamson's chapter in Bristol is over. And so that is your Morning Buzzcast for Monday, April 8th. I'm Abe Madcore. Thanks for listening to the Buzzcast. Stay healthy. Be good to each other. I'll speak to you on Tuesday.